Hello and welcome back to the Jervis Bay Weekend podcast, your weekly audio companion featuring stories from the people who bring the South Coast to life. I'm Sam, your host and the editor of Jervis Bay Weekend magazine, and it's fantastic to be back with you for episode 4. A massive thank you to everyone who's been sharing the show and sending us feedback. It's great to see how naturally you're all stepping into becoming weekly listeners. This week, we're diving headfirst into an upcoming event that embodies everything we love about winter on the bay. The Arts Muster Festival is taking place here in Huskisson from the 27th to the 30th of August. Across 4 days, Huskisson will host 19 cultural events. But the heart of the festival is its program of 12 two-day workshops. Now, these aren't your typical art classes. Arts Muster is built on a simple, liberating truth. We are all creators. These two-day weekend adventures are designed as immersive sensory experiences to help us release our preconceived notions of art, or whether we're creative or not. It's a chance to reconnect with natural materials and ground ourselves in a sense of place and well-being. Before we meet our first tutor, this episode is proudly supported by Greenhouse Huskisson. If you're looking to break the routine of working from home, Greenhouse offers Huskisson's premier co-working space with breathtaking views over Jervis Bay. Whether you need a hot desk, a dedicated office, a professional meeting room, or a place to host a seminar, Greenhouse is your local sanctuary for focus and productivity. Check them out right in the heart of Husky. Now, our first guest today is multidisciplinary artist, well-being practitioner, and founder of the Sage Caravan, Mikey Jane Blakeney. Mikey Jane is leading a fascinating two-day workshop called Finding the Dollmaker Within, Intuitive Cloth Doll Making. Through simple hand sewing, natural fabrics, personal symbolism and story, Mikey Jane guides participants on a journey to craft a unique cloth doll and reconnect with the innate maker inside us all. Here's my conversation with Mikey Jane. Okay. So Mikey Jane, your cloth dolls are more figurative sculpture than child's toy, which I think is what might spring to mind for some people when you say the word doll. How do you describe those dolls?
I describe them more as like a familiar or a talismanic being, or for me the dolls have like a presence, and usually I have an intention when I'm creating them, and so it's like a vessel that I put all my intentions into, and often they hold that for me, and they're very tactile, and so it's like a physical object that can be held for many different reasons. It can be for to give you courage, it can be something to give you comfort, it can be for joy, whatever it is that you're needing at that time.
Yeah,
the dolls actually embody the stories and what like your feelings and emotions and whatever it is that's coming up for you as you're creating them.
Yeah, that's an important distinction to make, I think, between what people will be making with you in their doll versus a work of art, because this is not something that's meant to be put on the shelf, is it? It's meant to be used.
Yeah. You can put them on a shelf if you like, but they're also something that can sit by your bed and hold your dreams. It can be something that can, you know, be held in your pocket when you're needing a little bit of extra sort of courage for the day, or it can be something that, you know, you treasure and you put away and then you bring out seasonally, and it can represent your seasons, or something that, you know, that it depends what they're being created for. And you know, doll is a very loose term. Like for me, like when people have made their dolls with me, like they can be you know, they can be humanistic or they can be anamorphic, like animals.
Yes.
They come through as someone created a leaf sometime. Another person, the doll created, became a heart and had other things like charms on it. And so it really is, it really is intuitive. And all of those people came along to my workshop, you know, with one thing in mind, and they all walked away with something incredibly special and very unique to them. And that, yeah, meant far more to them than what their intention was initially or what they thought they were going to make initially.
Yeah, yeah. Some of your beautiful dolls have animal heads. Some of them don't have any facial features. They just have a sort of blank face. And they, all of them, I think, they're clothed in unique costumes. How did you get into doll making?
Look, as a child, I think I would just grab anything and I would see faces in everywhere and in everything, and like stones and bits of wood and all sorts of things would become my little friends. I had a very unusual childhood. We moved around a lot and had a very rich internal life, and all the things around me, we didn't always carry a lot with us as we moved a lot. And so I would create these little beings as to hold what I would need them to hold at any time. And then throughout my life at different times, I just seemed to return to it with kind of almost, you know, not consciously. It was just the things that I would pick up things and just create them at different times. And then when I had my children, it really started to emerge quite strongly again. Each of them, I made them dolls with all my hopes and dreams and intentions and love for them. Were imbued into them. And then from there, I started creating for other family members and other people around me. And it just continued on. And then sort of over the last probably 10 or 15 years, it's really, really been a strong calling that's come in a lot stronger. And it's kind of a very major part of my practice now. It's not my whole practice, but it's a very, it's been a really long journey, and it's really sort of helped me to get a real true sense of my belonging as we have always moved. It was, I started creating ancestral dolls and like calling in my ancestors who I felt very disconnected from. And from there, become a really big thing that I've kind of started to share with other people now, those practices, or my practice, with the hopes that people can find what it is for them.
Yeah, so that was, I'm interested in that, definitely, of what the participants in your workshop are going to get from the experience, that you're going to help them to find their own sense of why in making a doll.
It's about finding their own voice, finding the creator. It's like every single one of us has an ancestor that at some point created a doll, like a grandmother or a mother that created a doll for their children or for a loved one, and created something that they put their love into. And those ancestors live within our DNA. Like they light up when we remember these old practices, when we, you know, like it's, even though our mind's not, you know, every one of us, you know, a lot of people these days are like, oh, I'd say I'm not creative, I don't know how to do this, or I've never sewed, or I don't. And the thing is, we all have these memories that live within us, and our bodies remember this stuff because they have evolved doing these things. And so it's like picking up those ancestral skills again and finding a part of yourself that maybe have been forgotten. And it's a sort of a remembering rather than a teaching that happens.
I think that for you, the materials that you're using are just as meaningful as the finished work. So what kinds of things are you encouraging people to use in making these objects?
Well, I usually start with, you know, I like to use really natural fabrics and like, you know, the fabrics that our ancestors would have used, like linens and wool and cottons and things like that. But also the thing is with them, like, you know, you might have some fabric that was your child's, you know, like pajamas, or like you might have a bit of fabric from a loved one that's passed. And, you know, this doll might be a vessel that carries some of that love or some of that story forward. So, you know, people might want to bring along a little bit of some fabric or some textile or, a, you know, an old earring or a charm or something that has meaning for them in whatever way that they might want to imbue into the doll.
And on that note, I think it's something that you encourage people to think about what's going on inside their doll as well as what's on the outside. And it's not just stuffing on the inside, is it?
Every doll's created with a heart.
Yeah.
We actually create a very special, we perform a little bit of magic.
Wonderful.
Which is creating a beautiful heart. And I bring along all sorts of like little herbs and some little little bits and pieces that people might want to put into them, but we choose everything intuitively. It's, you know, you can bring some things along for yourselves, but also I will have things there, and I really encourage people not to think too much about what they're putting in, but like just to be drawn to what they're drawn to and then use that rather than kind of sitting there going, well, I need it to have this or I need it to have that. Like, I like people to kind of find, you like just, because what happens then is that's where the little magic happens, because when they find out about what they've actually put in there, generally there's a story behind that that comes through for them, or there's some kind of connection that is made that really sort of speaks to them and then moving forward what their doll is really about.
Yeah, that's really special, and you can put dried herbs and things in there as well. It becomes a fully sensory experience. The creation of with a sense of smell and touch.
All of it. There's a smell. There's a touch. There's, you know, a feeling.
The memory.
There's memory. There's story. You know. There's love. There's breath. It all goes into them.
So I'm interested in some of the practical aspects of your workshop too, because people don't need any sewing experience or skills or any sort of artistic background to take this workshop at the Arts Muster. So tell me
There's absolutely no previous skills in anything needed.
So what kind of skills are you going to show people on the weekend?
So on the weekend, it'll depend. I mean, there'll be people with varying skills. Some people will already have certain skills and they can use them if they like. I've always found that, like, we're just using very, very basic skills, like very basic stitching. Sometimes, like, some people really are comfortable stitching, so that they can use doll, like, create a doll that is wrapped. I can show them a very ancient way of creating their doll that really doesn't need a hell of a lot of stitching or anything. There's different practices, and it sounds like we'll create a pattern, and we'll create, firstly we'll start with creating like a little bit of a map and a little bit of just making marks on paper just to get into the flow of things. So we'll do a little bit of, creating and seeing what symbols come through for us. Then I'll take them through different practices to start to discover who their doll is and what skills they'll need. But it's very, very basic skills in stitching. I can show that. If people are a little bit more advanced, then we can look at a few other practices as well.
I love the idea of the wrapping and binding. I can imagine.
Some of those dolls have just been absolutely exquisite that have come through for people.
Yeah.
And just each bit of cloth that's wrapped has some kind of intention, and and they just kind of build, and it's a really lovely practice.
And how do you make the pattern for the doll, for your particular doll?
So it will depend on what style of doll they're making. I do like to have a few different things there. So, and some people might have like sticks and things like that and use them within it, or like bits of nature. And other people will be really interested in sewing a stitch doll like that's on the picture. I think on the Arts Monster thing, like they might see like the little doll, the little girl doll. Which is, that's Emily, that's my daughter.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah, so that was a doll made for her. I'll bring that one along so everyone can meet her. So like with that, we'll create, like we'll use different masks, and like I'll show people how they can create a really simple pattern for the doll, and then from there they'll start stitching it, and then we'll go through different layers. But we also work into the fabric, so like sometimes people like to age the fabric a bit, or they like to stitch words or symbols or different things into the fabric as well.
Yeah.
So we sort of work through that a bit as well and find out, you know, what's coming through for each person. And so I just take them through step by step, and at each level, like at each stage, we get to, we see what's coming through for each of the people. And like we all start with the same practice and the same thing, and then they all are completely unique and different. Like there's never any two dolls. They're even vaguely similar.
I think that's part of the magic of being in a workshop with other people, is everybody has the same brief, but you all make something completely different. And I remember a similar workshop that I went to a few years ago, and whilst other people were making human figure dolls, I made a horse.
Yes.
With sticks for legs.
Yeah,
and exactly. Emu feathers for the mane.
Yeah, beautiful.
It was pretty fun,
and that's what it is. It's just, yeah. I did a 4-day ancestral doll workshop down in Victoria at the end of last year, and we took people on a very big journey and a deep journey over 4 days, and we had as in men and women come to these workshops. Like in nearly every workshop I've had both males and females at. And at this particular workshop, I had a lot of older people that were like in their 70s. Like there was two couples, and there was the man and the woman. And one of the men made his great-grandmother, and the other, like, you know, doll for her. And another man made this, like, this incredible dog.
Wow.
And he wrapped it and he did, and like their stories. And because the thing is, it's not just a doll. Like as we're creating, we're remembering, and as we're making things, like stories come to us and memories come to us, and all of these become what our doll is, and they become like the stories come through as we're doing it, which is quite, yeah, it's a beautiful sharing, and it's a beautiful, like, you know, often there's something in that as well. It's really about the process rather than having this perfect doll at the end of it. And the thing is, if they were all perfect and perfectly the same, and like they wouldn't have the magic of what you're going to receive when you actually create a little, you know, your doll. Like they're absolutely incredible little beings.
Oh, I can't wait to swing by your class and have a look at what everyone's making. And just before we wrap this up, this is probably a really difficult question because I know it's hard to play favourites, but what's the most favourite doll you've ever made?
Oh, I'm just, this is really hard because, yeah, I made some. Each one as I'm making it is like absolutely all and everything. And then often those dolls, like I'll make them and they'll carry with me for a while, and then they end up going to whoever they were actually meant to be for. And sometimes I'll carry a doll for 4 or 5 years, and then all of a sudden someone will pop into my world and I'll be like, oh, that doll's for you. And so I gift them. And I've recently had, you'll probably see the photos on my like Instagram or whatever. I've recently had this real download and these dolls coming through. I've made like a little deer and a little rabbit at the moment, and I've totally come up with a whole different way of making them that just came to me recently, and I'm just absolutely in love with them at the moment. So they're probably some of my faves.
I did see those on your Instagram, and they have so much personality. They're delightful.
Well, I'm going to bring them all. No two of my dolls are similar or the same, but I'm going to bring a whole heap of different dolls. And so people can just, like, I like people to touch them and play with it. Like, nothing is too special that people can't feel them. And, yeah, and I actually took them with me. I went away on the weekend. And these ones have, like, hawthorn berries and mugwort and some special little herbs in them. And, yeah, people were just holding them and just, like, I don't know, they're so joyful, and, like, they've just got so much sort of, I don't know, you hold them and they're just, you can feel them. So, yeah, I'm quite excited to bring them along for people to meet.
Yeah, well, I hope I get the chance to meet them too. And thank you so much for sharing these insights with us today. I'm sure that that's going to resonate with a lot of people who need some joy in their lives right now.
Yes, yeah. And that's the thing that I hope people do get out of the workshop. Hope that they just find that sort of sense of wonder and joy within them that maybe they might have, you know, not had a chance to play with for a while.
So, yeah.
I'm hoping that there is that sort of, yeah, that remembering of that as well.
Perfect. Thank you very much.
Yeah, well, thank you so much for having me on, for listening. And I'm really looking forward to coming to the Arts Monster and being there.
Brilliant. See you there.
Thank you.
There's something deeply grounding about sitting down with simple cloth, needle and thread, and letting story take physical shape. Or indeed, as Mikey Jane explained, you don't even need to sew by using her wrapping and binding techniques. You can explore this workshop and secure your spot at the Arts Muster website. Our second guest today brings another wonderfully unique perspective on creativity, nature and impermanence. Greer Taylor is an artist whose practice explores our deep relationship with the environment. At Arts Muster, Greer is hosting a two-day workshop entitled Ephemeral Wonderings and Wanderings. Rather than focusing on creating something permanent to take home and put on a shelf, Greer's workshop invites participants into a shared journey of wandering through nature, tuning into our senses, and finding out what that particular day holds. It's an invitation to slow down, let go of expectations, and engage with your surroundings in a completely new way. I caught up with Greer to talk about the magic of ephemeral art and what might happen during her two-day journey into impermanence. Hi, Greer. Thank you for joining me today. Tell me about the concept of ephemeral art.
Ah, that's a deep one. Basically, it's ephemeral art. Well, there's two things there, art and ephemeral. But ephemeral is just a word that reminds us that everything is transitory. Everything is temporary. Our breath is something that happens once and then it is gone. Our words, you know, come and they go. Our day comes and it goes, and our life comes and it goes. That's ephemerality. And art is making sense of the world as each artist sees it and feels it, and putting those two together, I'm wanting to explore ephemerality, because it is basically how life works. It's how the planet works, and to talk about that and entwine it into artworks. Yeah.
The main photo that's promoting your workshop that's coming up at Arts Muster, it shows a hand that's laying out petals on a rock in a river. Tell me what's the intention behind a work like that?
Well, those, they're not pebbles. They're actually wattle pom-poms.
Oh, pom-poms. Yes, I thought they were flower.
Wattle flower pom-poms.
Right.
And I was at a river edge. There were wattles blooming and dropping their little pom-poms after they've done their work. And I'm always really interested in what's happening on the day when I'm out in the bush. And this was what the day was speaking about. It was like the end of the wattle season and all these little pom-poms. And then I'm next to a river and with rocks on the edge, and I see that the water level has gone down. And so there's this beautiful line of where the water had been in the last day or so. It had left, still got the moisture in the water. And so by taking the pom-poms from the tree, from the wattle trees that had grown right near the creek, and acknowledging the change of levels of the water, and I was just arranging them along that level. I'm just following this beautiful line that was put there, but for me to follow. And it's just that, how can I interact with what is happening in the day, or has happened over the past and is now, there's like shadows being left behind, like the moisture held in the rocks there. So yeah, it's just and the beautiful shapes that occur just as a consequence of following that natural line.
It's very poetic, a very poetic way of interacting with nature.
It is, and I really believe, have come to believe that allowing things to be poetic is a beautiful way to dance with nature, really, and dance with life, really. Like, it's poetry or poetics, I guess, allows things to not be put into boxes, allow things to become what you don't expect them to become. For me, when I look out, I'm sitting here in my studio and I'm looking out to these beautiful gum trees, and I just see every branch on that, though, every gum tree and every blade of grass as poetic as it interacts with the breeze. It's creating a visual poetry. Mm. And it's like me, when I do ephemeral works like that one that's in the promos, it's like I am a temporary choreographer. I'm stepping in, taking what nature is talking about herself, and I'm gathering it into my own hands and then looking around and creating a little dance, in a way, like a choreography, and then it's going to blow away. And all the water will rise, and it will, and the little pom-poms might drift off into the water. I don't see that part, but that's that part of that acknowledgement of ephemerality and the poetics of it, because as it breaks apart, it's creating new patterns.
And returning back to nature and back into a chaotic alignment.
Chaotic, but the order, nature is so... You know, it's order and chaos all at once happening, and it's all going to return to soil, which is all then therefore going to return to future life.
Yeah, you know, I was walking along the boardwalk along the shores of Jervis Bay down here recently, and the wind was coming up through the grates under the boardwalk, and it had lined up all the gum leaves into an alignment along the boardwalk. And I wish I'd taken a photo, because it was nature making some kind of geometry out of chaos. It was magical.
Yeah, absolutely. And you do see that as well. As and then, you know, sometimes I will actually pull off what I see like that and sort of extend work using my way of seeing it. You know, that's nature's way of interacting with her parts, and then me, which who is nature as well, interacting in a different way.
Yeah, what is that urge that we have to make art in nature, or to see art in nature?
I think it's innate, because we are nature. You know, that whole idea of humans being separate from is part of the reason we are in these dangerous times, and that wanting, I guess, to dance with nature is I think it's deeply innate within us to want to, and it's because we have this capacity, the cognitive capacity, it's a wanting to make sense. And that's, you know, it's been both a, you know, a blessing and a curse, that, but, you know, how do we make sense without causing damage? How do we make sense by actually being contributory and participatory?
Yes.
These are the questions that I ask.
Yes, because it's not about taming nature, is it? It's about, exactly, like you said, it's a choreography.
That, yes, exactly. Yeah, and we for some reason, 10,000 years ago, decided that taming nature is what we were on about. And which is, you know, it just breaks my heart even just saying that sentence. But, and we somehow need, let's not use those, you know, words like that. It would be beneficial to all life on this planet if we, us, with our cognitive capacity, can actually learn to dance instead of learn to try and put things into boxes and make it all smooth and comfortable for our benefit, and forget that we are causing damage to other beings' lives.
Yeah. On your website, you equate making art to exploration, which is, making art and exploration are both journeys. How do those journeys intertwine for you?
Good question. It's almost hard to separate the idea of art and exploration. I have a mind that is interested in how things fit together, and art has provided me a beautiful way of connecting the dots in a way that is outside the box of what our culture tends to, like, you know, I'm not trying to control, I'm just trying to explore and open up possibilities that I and potential visitors can see what they might not have seen otherwise. And I'm finding things that I hadn't seen before through the exploration. And so art provides that. It's just, they just sit together for me.
I've been lucky to see some of your large-scale installations in places like, in outdoor environments in Kangaroo, yep, Valley or Berry or whatever, and mm-hmm, I love the way that you're engaging the audience to have an exploration about how art and the landscape interact. Are you trying to give people a lens to view the world in a different way?
I think the idea of a lens might be too specific, but I definitely want, the intention of my work is to open hearts, I guess, in that, you know, we all, as you said, we all have a connection to nature, but our busy, busy, busy culture tends to distract us from that. And my work is trying to remind us, and then by doing that, you know, people's hearts open up, and then they remember, and it's about remembering as well of that we are part of nature, we are nature, and that our busy life might not be as deep and as fulfilling as as we want it to be, and that part of that reason is because we haven't made those or maintain those connections, deep connections with nature.
Yeah, I think that your the description of your two-day workshop that you're offering at Arts Muster here in Huskisson at the end of August, it feels like an opportunity or an invitation for people to join you in slowing down and remembering. In the title, you've called it Ephemeral Wonderings and Wanderings. So I'd love to know what that means. What can a student expect when they join you on those 2 days?
An exploration, yes, indeed. We're going to be working both inside and outside, and stitching these two worlds that we live in together. We'll be working out in the natural areas around the space that we'll be at, and observing what is happening that day. And of course, each student will see something different, which is part of what's so exciting. And then we'll be bringing it back into the room we're working in and creating a community drawing or shared drawing where we keep layering until the drawing is like a forest floor with layers and layers and layers of fallen leaves, in a way, and just as people's hearts end up being opened and what is in them gets put down onto the page, whether it be words or torn up pieces of paper or scribbles or drawings or whatever, I'm really quite excited to see what will arise and not working in your little piece of the pie, so to speak. We'll be moving around constantly and layering onto and responding to other people's work and then going back outside and bringing what we experienced outside into the space again and back outside. And so, yeah, there's sort of this moving back and forth from the inside to the outside.
Well, that certainly sounds like a choreography.
Absolutely, yes, it is. It is indeed. And then I will also, as part of that, inviting participants as they're going deeper into their this relationship is into what I call Love the Earth conversations, because one of the things that I have learned and it breaks my heart every time I speak of it is that many people do love the earth but are in fact ashamed to speak it out loud. That fear of being called a tree hugger or a hippie or something like that is rife. I've had the opportunity through some of my public interaction projects of speaking to many people, and I've tragically had that confirmed. So I'm trying to inspire and create containers where people learn to wrap words around their love for the living world. And so that will be a small part of the project, so that'll be sort of interspersed for a little bit in the afternoons probably. So we'll bring it together. So we'll be going out as individuals and sitting and experiencing, then we come back and work on a drawing which is community, and then we actually have the conversations. So
well, that sounds absolutely wonderful, and I hope that I get to waft past and see what you're up to. Thank you very much for sharing all of that with us today, and I hope to see you soon. What a wonderful reminder that art doesn't have to be permanent to leave a lasting mark on our well-being and how we see the world. As you can hear from both Mikey Jane and Greer, the Arts Muster Festival isn't just a calendar of events. It's a genuine gift to our regional community. Whether you choose a two-day workshop in doll making, ephemeral art, tapestry weaving or printmaking, or whether you drop into one of their evening cultural events, it's a chance to spend time with like-minded people and nourish your creative spirit. To explore the full program of 19 events and secure your place in one of the two-day workshops, head over to artsmuster.com.au. Enrolments for the workshops will close on the 16th of August, so there's still time to peruse the program and choose a class that intrigues you. Thank you for tuning in to episode 4 of the Jervis Bay Weekend podcast. Don't forget to pass this episode along to a creative friend, or pop over to jervisbayweekend.com.au for all our latest articles and regional news. I hope you'll feel some winter sun shining on you this weekend, and I'll catch you next Thursday.